From the Nine Network, Denny Widler. Denny, very good morning to you.
Morning, Jen. Pup, what about your Tigers? Are they still making news?
Say, go again, buddy.
Your Tigers are still making news.
Oh, mate. Seriously, Abby, please, what are you thinking? Well, at that stage, silly question, he wasn't thinking.
Oh, look, you know what? It's not the smartest thing he could have done.
Yeah,
but
it's not the worst either.
Honestly, yeah, in the light of when it was said,
yeah, I agree.
Where it was said.
Oh, he's forgiven in 1 minute. He runs out onto the field.
Look,
you'd
be saying that in a dressing chat with the boys. Yeah. Yes, he shouldn't have said it publicly, but there'd be a lot of other Tigers players
thinking it.
Probably said it on the drink to their mates as well.
Yeah.
Like, and they'd say it, you know, mucking around and trying to get a bit of a laugh and all that. I understand.
Yeah, of course.
You know, that's what he was trying to do, but if he had his time over, mate, you know, in front of a lot of people, he probably wouldn't have done it.
It's a lot worse done after winning the grand final, I would have thought. So, yeah.
And also, I mean, I watched all of that happen yesterday and I saw, I mean, even the Fisher, James Fisher Harris doesn't say boo ever. I've tried to get him to say something in an interview for the last 4 years.
He scares me, that bloke.
Yeah, oh, mate, he's
seriously scary.
He is scary. And he doesn't say much. He keeps his thoughts to himself. But the players always say when he says something, they really listen. And, you know, they probably are. I mean, I'm not being disrespectful to other Penrith teams, but I think they have claimed to being the greatest ever Penrith side.
But, Denny, isn't that one of those things that, you know what, that's for others to, you know, to say. You don't say it yourself because you do have enough respect for the people that have come before you. And, you know, the other great teams. Like, to me, you think of someone like Greg Alexander, for example, like you just, you're just slapping him in the face. Like, he's been a legend of that club and there's been so many of them. But I just think, you walk around and say, I'm a good dad. No, mate, that's not for you to say you're a good dad. Other people say you're a good dad. Do you know what I mean? Say that.
I think Greg Alexander agrees.
No, I don't doubt that. But Greg, that's my point. That's quarter a respected gentleman who has been a great player. He's never going to spruik his own tyres. You know what I mean? You just don't do that.
But on their pure track record in terms of a Penrith side, what is it? 3 straight grand finals.
Yeah, oh, it's been amazing.
Yeah, they're brilliant. They're a brilliant team.
2 wins.
Yeah.
And awesome. In this semi-final series, they beat everyone by 10+.
Yeah.
They really should have won that grand final by more than they did. And they've just won everything in terms of, you know, the entire club as well, all through the grades. Mm-hmm. I can't remember that happening.
Yeah.
At least not for a long time. And when you look at what they've done over the last 3 years, I think their performances over the last 3 years even put them above the Roosters back to back. And I think that you have to go back to that great Parramatta side. And even like Melbourne didn't go back to back, did they, Loz? They haven't done that. So, you know, I think that they have a claim to being the team of the modern era. The club of the modern era. I mean, like, back-to-back grand finals, 3 grand finals, and I know they're losing Tiger Appy and they're losing Billy, but they're not going to get much worse. Parramatta, who are the second-place team, probably are going to struggle to reach the standards they did without Reid Marnie and Papali'i, unless they sign someone. And you look at where is the next challenge going to come from to that team? Is it someone like, can the Cowboys really grow from this year? Can the Roosters live up to the potential they have? You know, you don't know. Like, South just keep on getting close without being able to convert. I don't know how they're going to improve a lot more, but they probably, you know, they're a team you have to look at. But you wonder who is actually going to challenge Penrith. And I don't know. I think they've got a claim to being the dominant team of the modern era. 3 grand finals, 2 wins in a row, absolute dominance through the premiership season. You know, they're a team. They've got some brilliant individuals, I get it. But They're a great team. They play like a machine. They know what they're doing. And they're going to take some real beating next year. I know it's a long way away, but gee, you've got to respect that club. And I know people, I've heard the criticism that they're arrogant and all this sort of stuff. Having dealt with the individuals in that team for the last 3 years, I would not call them arrogant. Mm-hmm. I would not say they're an arrogant bunch of guys. I mean, I would have to say Jerome Luai, he made a mistake with that post he put out. But that's how I feel about it. I don't know if everyone else would agree with that. But he is one of the most respectful, engaging individuals in sport that I've dealt with. He's a, he's a Mount Druitt boy. He's done it tough growing up. And the person that he's becoming, I think he deserves credit for that. He made a mistake with that post. I get that. But Brian Todd, you couldn't meet a nicer bloke. You go through that squad, Nathan has made some mistakes off the field, but when you speak to him, he's a humble individual. I just think that they do get a bad rap. And I think times are changing. I think we can't be stuck in the 70s and the 80s with our views and realise that, the kids of today are different. I'm interviewing blokes, 30 years younger than me. But you've got to move with the times and realise that they've got different ways of approaching life.
Yeah.
They aren't always right, but their ways of approaching life are different to, Laurie, what you and I grew up with.
Oh, most definitely, Denny. And some people don't like it. Other people will accept it.
Well, even the footage, it's very American, right? You watch the NBA and the guy, like the guys have got the goggles on for the champagne spray. It looks very American. Yeah, I agree, Denny.
But I'm still trying to get my head around the Jerome Luai post.
Yeah.
For me, and how that is a term of endearment.
Well, you know what? I can't really enter into that area.
Yeah.
But I know that, I mean, you follow American sport.
Mm. Yep.
American culture. Mm. I think that if you follow that, you've seen that term used in an endearing way. But I don't see it like that. But I mean, I'm just know that that's. I don't think he meant harm by it, but it came across in a way that a lot of people can't accept. And I get that.
Yeah.
However, him sitting there with a cigar in his mouth and, pardon me, sunglasses on and wearing a hat, whatever he was doing, that's today's athlete.
Yeah. I get that. I think that's. Part of the show too. I think that's what makes them.
Even you look at
as showmen,
how they turn up to the game. Gone are the a lot of teams turn up in their club tracksuit. Penrith are turning up in mate. They've got the suit on. Yeah. They've got all the cool gear. It's just they've been. It comes across very American, but they've been doing it for the last couple of years. That's their vibe.
I've had a lot to do with these guys, like in Origin. I love the music they walk around with on their shoulder and like the boombox, whatever you want to call it. I was in that dressing room was Sunday night from the moment they got there, and I watched every part of their celebration, and they were just loving life.
Yeah.
I wrote about in my column on Sunday that they had a secret mission to do with winning against the odds, and obviously that's now all come out, the Top Gun stuff. They were in their aviators. They had their call signs. They've got for each other. Nathan Cleary, the Iceman. The Octopus and whatever else. Dylan Edwards was Casper. But I mean, they had their own little pact with each other about keeping that all secret. And it was some sort of a guidance or a motivation for them through the finals. That they knew that they were in a dogfight. With everybody against them. And you know what? They deserve to celebrate. One or two things, yes, out of line. But, I was in that dressing room and You know, they were respectful to one another. They were, you know, if you went up and asked them for a chat, they were more than happy to talk. They were just a very, they're an accommodating bunch of guys. And I know from the outside, they're like, it's easy to kick them, and it's easy to, you know, have an old school approach towards, you know, the clothes they wear or the music they listen to or the sunglasses they've got on or whatever. But you've got to move with the times. I mean, you can't be stuck in another generation, and you've got to realise that not everybody's the same, and you've got to accept people for, you know, this is what they know. This is they're probably mimicking the sports stars they admire, and that's the way that they want to be perceived. And, you know, as long as they're respectful to the community and society in general, which I think largely, you know, in the last few years they have been, you know, since they've really become a premiership force, I think they've done a lot of work on their club. They've had some dark times in the background, but they've come through a lot of that. And I think that, you know, as you know, they could go three in a row. That's how good they are.
Yeah, no, they're wonderful group of players. Yeah. I mean, when you look at what they've been able to achieve over the last 3 years, it's been pretty special, and they go into next year as favourites. Now, you spoke about being stuck in a generation. Parramatta, 36 years. It'll be 37 next year. Where are they at? Do you think they can compete next season?
Oh, Laurie, I think they'll compete. I think that Brad Arthur, first of all, I've talked quite positively about Penrith there in terms of the people at that club. I've got to say, in the lead up to the grand final, Parramatta were amazing. They embraced it. They took it in. The way they, as you know, I'm not particularly close to a lot of the people at Parramatta. I don't know them that well, but the way they took the media in, made themselves available again, was unbelievable. Brad Arthur was fantastic. He got it. He understood the week that was. On the night, they just weren't in the hunt. They just, you know, after the first 10 minutes, Penrith were just dominating, as you would be well aware. Can they move forward from here into a premiership side? I'm not sure. I think they've done well to get there. I think Reid Marnie's a huge loss. I know Josh Hodgson's coming in, but he's had a couple of bad knee injuries and had to have reconstructions and all that sort of thing. And he's also, you know, he's in his mid-30s now. So that's going to be how well he adapts is going to be really important for them. And also, I guess, the issue of re-signing Mitchell Moses and Dylan Brown is going to be an issue for the club as well, because it's not ideal that they're both able to negotiate with clubs in about a month. And that's going to be, you know, unless they can get that wrapped up quickly, that's going to be an issue for a lot of clubs. And I think that, you know, if I'm a club looking to rebuild or to, you know, find a strike weapon, I'm a Dylan Brown fan. I know he didn't have the greatest final series, but I think that he's a player who has the ability to be something. And he's got that X factor about him. I wouldn't be surprised if clubs really have a big crack at Dylan Brown. I know that he's very close to Brad Arthur and his family. I spoke to Jake Arthur about him, and he said that, you know, Brad treats him like another son, Dylan. That's how close he is to the Arthurs. And that may, you'd hope, if as a Parramatta fan, that's going to stand him in some sort of reasonable position to re-sign him. But I think he's one that a lot of clubs will look at. I know Mitchell Moses is an obvious target as well. You know, I think Dylan Brown is the one, though. He's the one who, if I was a rival club, I'd be trying to sign. If I was Parramatta, I'd be desperate to re-sign him. So, yeah, I think they're going to have some issues. If they made the grand final again next year, they'd be doing really well, I reckon.
Okay, on to the Kangaroo squad, Danny. And what did you make of the squad that was selected, the 24, to head to the UK?
Well, I don't think we're necessarily going to be the favourites, are we? I know the betting markets have us that way.
But yeah, we're very short.
Yeah, I think I don't know if I agree with that. I think that New Zealand's got a very good squad, and I think our squad's obviously chock full of stars. But I don't think we're anywhere near the dominant force that we have been previously. I think, you know, you still expect Australia to win, but I don't think you'd be surprised if they get rolled by New Zealand.
All these other nations have got stronger squads than they've ever had before. Yeah. I believe, Denny, and I think you're right with New Zealand. They look as strong as they've ever been.
And Madge has been, you know, doing a lot of groundwork for that side. He's been, you know, since the Tigers decided to punt him, he's been pretty much concentrating on that full time. And you know, I think that, you know, I think they're going to be a definite force, and I think they could roll Australia. I was interested, Laurie, in the way you guys brushed Daly Cherry Evans from the leadership.
The reason for that was that James Tedesco's been the standout leader in our minds, and he's led New South Wales.
I get that
superbly. Yeah.
I get that. What about vice captain?
Well, a bit like Nathan. Mm. You know, Nathan could put his hand up and say, well, you know, he deserved to be vice captain, led Penrith to a premiership, another premiership. Mm. But we thought as a leadership group, these were the three players that will help make decisions while on tour. They're very well respected, and they're guys that I think, you know, have led their team incredibly well this year and will work really well with James Tedesco. So I think that was the reason behind having these guys as the leader. Speaking with Mal all the way through this process with Daly Cherry Evans, he wants to give both players an opportunity.
Yeah. That's the sole
in terms of
there.
him and
there's no guarantee Cherry Evans.
He's not guaranteed a position
to start. And you want your captain to be
captain
a given.
And your leaders to be.
No,
in the
I
reckon
I
that's what it
that.
Tells me.
James Tedesco had to be captain. I'm just curious about, like, you know, Cherry led Queensland to beat New South Wales. Hmm.
Yeah, he did.
Does that count for something or not?
Yeah, it does. But we think a better leader at this stage is James Tedesco. And we couldn't guarantee that Daly will be in that starting 13. So, yeah. I mean, if you name
so
a,
do you,
a tour
do you,
captain...
Do you pick a vice captain or you pick a leadership group?
So there's the two vice captains will be Cam Murray and Isaiah. But that'll be the leadership group when they get to England.
And I find that fascinating that the Queensland captain doesn't get into your leadership group.
Mm. Yeah, well, I think everyone's got a different and strong opinion on it. Mal might include other people's in a leadership group when he gets overseas, but in my discussions with Mal and Lockie, we decided that those three were the best fit to be the leaders on this particular
team. Geez, you must be influential, Oz, because, I mean, they're two Queenslanders, and you've just said, rightio, give us the Blues as leaders. Must have some sway.
I'll tell you what we do. We do have some good, robust and honest conversations, Denny. There you go.
Did Peter Volandis pick the team or not?
No, Pete was in the room, the chair. But we, as a group, we came up with these 24 players. We came up with the leaders who we thought were the best people for the gig. And again, you know, like when you go through it, like you're sitting here talking about we haven't spoken about it, we will, but Dylan Edwards missing out. I mean, that's a tough call.
Mm.
That's a tough call for Dylan Edwards. But when you look at the makeup of the squad and the fact that we've got other players there that can be play in different positions and we think a bit more versatile than Dylan, unfortunately, he had to miss out. But what do? You can't pick more than 24. We would have loved to have found a position for him. I think everyone has fallen in love with him and what he's been able to do with Penrith consistently week in, week out for the last couple of years. But, you know, they're tough decisions that have to be made.
Pup, you're going to have to intervene when Cookie's next on the show because Loz left him out too.
Yeah, be disappointed, Cookie. You made it clear he would have loved to have been a part of this World Cup squad. And I love him. There's no doubt about it. But you look at the guys that are in front of him. Tough selection. So tough. But I reckon Coruscant could feel disappointed as well. Oh, yeah. But how do you fit four into two? That's the problem. Yeah. You know what? More importantly, it's probably a great sign of the number nines we've got playing at the moment in the NRL.
Look, I generally do think it's going to be the best World Cup for a while, isn't it? Mm. I mean, international football has just usually been about how far Australia wins by, but Australia's coming off a loss last time round, and I think that it's a genuine competition this time, and I think that it's actually going to be exciting for. I mean, obviously. The finals will be exciting. The rest of it, Australia will walk their way through it. But, it's a challenge for the team and it's a big challenge for Mal Meninga too. I mean, he needs to win this. There's some pressure on him, obviously, going over there. And I think it's going to be fascinating to watch.
A lot of these players have not been overseas on a long tour with Australia before. And in particular, I don't know there's too many that have gone to England. I think there's only a couple. So that's a big challenge in itself. You've got to spend 7 weeks away in a different environment, different country when you haven't been used to it. And then you've got the dynamics of players being in and out of the squad as well. And, some of them are going to miss out, and how they handle missing out on the squad is another factor as well. That Australia have to sort of deal with. But, I think you're right, Danny, and everything that you said in regards to it's an open competition. It's an open competition more so than we've seen in the past.
I'm excited.
Danny, thank you so much as always.
Thanks, guys.
This morning in the Premier League, it was a big win indeed for Leicester City up against Nottingham Forest, and it did finish 4-0 after they had three goals inside 35 minutes there. The Foxes this morning added a second half goal, so 4-0 in the Premier League. Now, we've just had some news in the last half hour as well as in regards to the Tab Everest. Giga kick for Clayton Douglas, which made it 4 from 4 at Flemington. RaceNet has this morning reported that giga kicks mean snapped up by the James Harren slot, by James Harren for his slot. So, giga kick. So, interesting selection, Loz. 4 from 4, this horse. A 3-year-old gelding by scissor kick. Winning the Dane Hill there at Flemington on the weekend. Won by, reasonably small margin. Was expected to win. It was odds-on favourite. And I reckon James Harren sat back and gone, well, I could take a pump with a few of these, older horses that probably, let's face it, could finish midfield at best. Or I could go the young 3-year-old who's on the way up, who we don't know just how much ability it's got yet, but clearly has plenty, and have a crack with the emerging sprinter from down south for Clayton Douglas. So why not?
I would say exactly the same thing, Meadow. Why not? He comes into the race. He's won his four starts, got a lot more improvement left in him. A good sign for them also. I believe that Craig Williams has been locked in as the jockey. So he's going to forego a ride in the Caulfield Cup to ride in the Everest.
Interesting. Craig Williams foregoing the Caulfield Cup to come north on Tab Everest Day and ride here at Randwick.
Yes.
That's a big call for Craig Williams.
Well, it's two things. One, he's covering the horse, but the other one is where the Everest now sits in the landscape of racing.
Jeez. That's an interesting call. That is an interesting call for Craig Williams.
Massive call.
Yeah. Because, this is a massive punt for James Harren and connections. But, like I said, why not?
But he's favouring now to come to the Everest rather than running a Caulfield Cup.
So, Craig Williams has ridden it the last two starts. So, obviously, on the weekend in the Vane Stakes at Caulfield, the start before. Interesting. It's not a... This is how much it's taken us by surprise. It's not even in the market. It will be very shortly. The traders are just getting that in.
These are the quotes here from James Harren. Craigie's very bullish about Gigi Kick and believes he can be competitive in the Everest. He has already taken the Everest ride on the horse, even though he could have stayed in Melbourne to ride in the Caulfield Cup.
There you go. So that is one we probably didn't expect this morning. Gigi Kick, according to RaceNet, to run for James Harran in his slot for the Tab Everest on Saturday week. Of course, the Silver Eagle Day there at Royal Randwick on Saturday, Caulfield Guineas Day down south as well. We've got the winner of the Laurie Daly Grand Final competition, Robbo. Morning to you, Robbo.
Good morning, boys. How are we?
Is this one of your proudest moments?
Oh, yeah, but Laurie and I have got a lot of history at Grand Final, so I was down there when he won with Journey.
86? Geez, yep. That's a long time ago, Robbo.
Yeah, that's how long we've actually known each other. We probably first met you when Shikey took me down there. I was actually sitting on the sideline.
Mate, that I can remember that. We all had all three grades in the Grand Final.
Yeah.
18s, reserve grade.
Played Gun the Guy and smacked him.
How old were you? 15?
No, 16.
Gee, you would have copped it. Playing some of those adults in Group 9 when they could get a hold of you. What did they do to you?
Catch him. A bit of running.
Couldn't catch him.
I was scared.
this meadow. Laurie scored a try, set up a try, or try assist as they call it these days, and saved a try. He held up a bloke called Rod Slater, who went on to play prop for Parramatta. Held him up over the line. The 16-year-old kid holding him, and he was a big boy, Rod Slater.
Actually, he was a big man. Yeah. He was massive. Actually, he went to Parramatta, Rod. I think he had some back issues. But he was...
He had a knee
injury, was it? Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
He was a goal-kicking back rower.
Yep. He was a good footballer, but that played his career, his knee injury.
Yeah, that's right. I think he went to Parramatta the next year.
He did.
Played a bit of first grade there, but you're right. But, Robert, we don't even know what the prize is, mate, but well done.
Tell me what I've got in the left hand at the moment.
We'll find something for you.
That's all right. No, it's good. Geez, Laurie, you've had a big weekend, haven't you?
Yeah, reasonably big. Reasonably big. Started on Friday night. Wow. Foxy Cleopatra. Did you back it, Robert?
I got down there to where I was having a few beers and I said, I got to back Liza's horse and bought some schooners and forgot all about it.
Oh, geez, that's not good. They could have paid for your schooners.
Five, not good now at one.
Yeah, at 5:15, I said, oh, shit, the horse. And anyway.
Yeah, well, back at next start.
Yeah, well, what odds are we going to get next start?
Oh, you'll get very good odds because it'll be in a better race than what it was on Friday night.
I reckon there'll be a few jockeys lining up to ride Foxy as well.
You reckon?
Yep. Who did you have on Friday night? I can't even remember.
Blake Shin.
Well, Blake won't want to be losing.
Well,
that
you were calling him Shinny on Friday night. Great ride, Shinny.
We were all on it.
Oh, we were all on it.
It was beautiful.
Where we were.
Well, I think I got gross unders, but you got to take the wins.
We're all jumping up and down. We're very excited. Mm. Oh, well, benchmark 64, doesn't matter.
Mate, you're off and away. Good on you, Robbo. Well done. Outstanding performance. Lachlan, good morning.
Morning, gents. How are we this morning?
Yeah, pretty good for a Tuesday, mate. Yourself?
Yeah, not too bad. Look, just wanted to talk about, everyone loves an underdog, but just yesterday, the NBL side, Adelaide 36ers, went up against a powerhouse team in the NBA, Phoenix Suns, and knocked them off.
Yeah, we had a good chat with Brad Rosen about it before, 134-124, and I must say, I didn't see the game, but I saw that the Suns put on a fair few of their starting players, at least to start the game, so... It wasn't like they just played the complete second stringers as well.
No, exactly right. Suns starters played about 26 minutes. It was a pretty good exhibition for them. And the odds that they gave the NBL side, they went around anywhere from 41 to 51 to win. And they knocked them off. So, unreal.
Did you get a buck on?
Oh, I had to. Got on and had a little sneaky on the 11 plus margin. So,
now, Lachlan, you sound like you follow the NBL, do you?
I follow a lot of the NBL and NBA, American sport and the NBL. But yeah, the NBL.
Can you steer us into the NBL this season? Give us a bit of a quick rundown on who we should be looking out for. Who do you think? Can the Sins, Kings go back-to-back? Who'll be the big improvers?
Yeah, look, the Kings are definitely up there, how they performed against the Jack Jumpers last year. But I do think we need to look out for the Jack Jumpers as well. You know, no one really gave them a chance, and they held it in the finals. So I think they'll be a very good side. And yeah, it'll be good to see how some of the key signings for different clubs will play out. Aaron Baines is, you know, used to play in the NBA himself. Is a massive pickup for the sport. And it's really generating a lot of interest. But yeah, it's always hard, the pre-season predictions. But yeah, Kings will be up there, and Tasmanian Jack Jumpers, I think, a bit of a smoky.
Okay, good stuff, Lachlan. Thanks so much. But yeah, no, it's certainly singing their praise, the 36ers. And they will be playing the Oklahoma City Thunder at another pre-season game on Friday, our time. And of course, Josh Giddey, who played for the 36ers, where he won NBL Rookie of the Year, now playing for the Thunder. So
I probably should know this question I'm about to ask you, but why are they over there playing when the competition is on?
Yesterday I did wonder this, and I'm sure it has something to do with the fact that the NBA have, you know, probably invited us, or the couple of teams have invited the Sixers over there to play. They only want to play now because it's getting closer to the start of their season. They've just all come back into training camp over there in the NBA.
Right.
So
they want to play against a different sort of team from Australia.
The best time for them to actually play games is just starting now.
Yeah, but I just wondered why we would go over there.
So
when your competition has already started.
Well, I guess we're
financially
making,
I suppose, that's well worth.
It's too good an opportunity to pass by. Yeah. So it's like, we'll hold the 36. The rest of the competition can start. Hold the 36ers back for a couple of weeks so they can go and do their thing and fly the flag for the NBL over in the US, because of obviously the opportunities to help put the NBL on the map is concerned. Yeah. Well, so we'll make concessions for that in order to, you know, to ensure that we still have to fulfill the broadcast commitments and the best time for the NBL season to start here.
Yeah. Oh, but no matter what happens now, the 36ers have certainly created headlines. And even though those blokes probably were Harvey Norman to start with, like all professional athletes, when you get beaten, you get shaken up a bit when you're expected to win, regardless of whether it's a trial, a full-on contest or whatever it is. So that's a massive result for Australian basketball and for the competition out here.
Good on you, Lachlan. Thanks for the call, mate. As Glenn Munsey points out to me, Giga Kick in the Tab Everest market at $26. There it is. So $26 to run in the James Harren slot, according to RaceNet this morning. $26 with Tab. Ron Duffacy is actually joining us. Dave will be back tomorrow. So, Duff, we got punters post-mortem after 9 o'clock. Morning to you, Duff. How are you?
Yeah, good. Thanks, guys.
What do you make of that, James Harren taking that punt with Giga Kick?
Well, it's an interesting move. I'm a big fan of a talented three-year-old being in the Everest. They've all run well. And you don't know, you know, beware of the unbeaten horse, as they always say. So who knows what sort of deals. When you get to these stage of these negotiations, you don't know what deals are being done. And, you know, the slot holder's got to look after himself. So he's a pretty influential man, Jonathan Munns. Who knows what sort of deal they've done there. He wants his horse in there. He may have put a bit of his own in there. So, yeah, look, I'm all for it. I think it's a really interesting move. Whether I can line him up, I don't know. I thought, be honest, not just should have got probably passed him there on Saturday, but he didn't. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It'll add a lot of interest, that's for sure.
Yeah, I'm sort of just looking and reading over the last 15 minutes. So Craig Williams has been booked for the ride. So I'm assuming you spoke about deals. It could be a deal done with the jockey as well. Do you read anything into Williams sticking on board and coming up here to ride it and sort of not taking rides on Caulfield Cup Day?
Well, you have to. You have to. You know, he'd have to have confidence in the horse already, which he obviously has. And I don't know what his Caulfield Cup ride was, but he would have had a fair book of rides on Caulfield Cup Day. There's feature races all day. So he's obviously been part of the negotiation deal there with the owner and the jockey saying, yeah, I'd love to ride him and all this stuff. It all hits in the middle and they say, let's do a deal.
Be a great position to be in if you're a slot holder, Duff. But now, after a couple of years of watching it and seeing when the horses are selected or not. Are you one for waiting or jumping in early?
For a bit of both. All depends what you're jumping in early with. If you're going to jump in early with a horse called Nature Strip, yeah, go for it. But when it gets to this late stage, you want to wait to the last minute if there's still a few around and do the best deal for yourself. You know, there was a lot of criticism of the slot holders when this Everest first come out, saying, well, they're mad putting 600,000 up. I think one of the slot holders said, I'm valuing my slot these days after a few years at $2 million.
Oh, jeez.
So they've made a bit of money. You know, not everyone can win. Not everyone can win. It's, you know, that's part of the deal with gambling, and that was a gamble. It's a $600,000 gamble for the big players, and if you can get a carrot at the end of it, it's certainly a good investment.
What do you think Godolphin will do, Duff? In secret, it doesn't look like it's going to head that way, but I guess Paul Ellie's the obvious top, and then Kamentari. Surely. Special K, running a Tab Everest. I guess it's Paul Ellie just through process of elimination.
Yeah, well, it's all weather watch. You know, Kamentari got very close to them on a very heavy track there on Saturday. Yeah. They're the pack we're talking about. He was a length or so behind them. And Paul Ellie, I don't know whether he's effective on the wet. And you have a look at this weather forecast we've got coming up this week. If you believe it, we won't be racing Saturday. That's how bad it is. They've got a week to recover, and I don't know if there's any rain forecast the following week. So Kamentari could fit somewhere in the picture of picking up some nice prize money in a Tab Everest if it was a heavy track. And Pulele, he's got a little bit of X factor, and he was forgivable on a biased track at Moonee Valley. In saying that, I'm a huge fan of I Would Have Picked In Secret, but it's not their style to pick a three-year-old filly.
What was your feeling when they first crossed the line in the Tab Epsom on Saturday? Were you with Ellsberg or top ranked, or did you think it was a dead heat?
First feeling was Ellsberg, slow-mo, top ranked, and after about 3 minutes, I said dead heat.
Yeah, fair enough. What about the performances of Zugotza in the Flight Stakes and No Compromise in the Metro winning the other group ones?
Look, Zugotza was all class. She just keeps lifting off the canvas. I think she was a little question mark at running the mile ride out there on Saturday, and she did exactly that. She's a classy filly. No doubt she's the best three-year-old filly in the land at up to a mile. Press on Lost and Running, he was fantastic. He's got timing. Those three across the line there were superb as far as peaking next start and top No Compromise was he's just Mr. Consistency. He's an absolute beauty, and he landed some nice bets winning there on Saturday, and he had to switch course, and not everything went right for him, but he still got the job done.
I'm so sure you'll chat about the two-year-olds and much more on Punters Post. More to mate, thanks so much.
Thanks, guys.
And that is coming up after the 9 o'clock news. That's our Tuesday, Pup and Lots.
Enjoy the rest of your day, boys.
Have a good one.